the Canadian Bitcoiners podcast is just two guys and maybe a guest or two discussing Bitcoin, Bitcoin equities, and the related macroeconomic space. It's not meant to be financial advice, so please, if you're doing any investing after listening to our program, do your own research, do your own due diligence, and understand that any money you invest can be lost. The show is meant for entertainment purposes only, and we hope you enjoy the program. Friends and enemies, welcome to the 74th episode of the Canadian Bitcoiners podcast. It's actually, I think, the 153rd or something episode land on the feed, but 74 weeks, you and I have come together like many before us to talk about things that are important. There's no campfire or like, you know, dead animals or meat being cooked, but I think the content's still important. What do you think? It's good to see you. How's things over there?
Great. It's good to see you too, Joey. It's over here. You were mentioning somewhere it's nice, but over here it's not. It's raining. It is not looking good outside, but heck, we need it. The grass is yellow. So I haven't mowed it in quite some time. It hasn't needed to be mowed because it's been nice and warm and dry for some time. But yeah, how are things over there with you, Joey?
Very well. I had a very busy day today. I was away from work for about a week. So I had a vacation, as you know, and then came back today to a full stack of emails, the modern day stack of paper on our desks. Len, we got a guest tonight.
Before you go any further,
okay, go ahead.
This is part of the CBP Media Network.
I was gonna roll it in. I'm working on where to roll it in. Yeah, okay. Hey, business on the air. It's okay. This is what we do. That's what keeps people coming back. So we got a guest tonight. Julian Figueroa is here from Kinetic Finance. You should check out his channel for sure. He did some digging the day that legislation or proposed legislation dropped for Canadian limits on crypto purchases. So we're gonna bring him in shortly. Now, Len, we got this video that we paid for. We got to run the video, I think, right?
Yeah, let's do a few things first before we hit that.
Why don't we bring in Julian, who's familiar with ShakePay, to talk about our first sponsor. Julian, go ahead. You're on the clock.
What's up? Did you guys say there was an ad read for ShakePay?
We didn't give you a read. We don't do any. We don't do any reading. We just talk about it.
Oh, we just talk about how great ShakePay is?
The five things that make it so great.
What is so great about ShakePay? No frills, buy Bitcoin, move it off the exchange, don't even pay fees, refer a friend, get 30 bucks. Fun fact, I made five figures doing that last year. Pretty crazy story, but I love ShakePay. And then you can shake your phone for free sats. I mean, it doesn't really get much better than that. So yeah, download ShakePay if you haven't. I know that a lot of people, they go to their Binance, their FTX, whatever, right? Just support like a legit Canadian company that's getting everyone on the Bitcoin standard and it'll pay off. So
there's three things I think that weren't included on there.
Wait a minute. Should we include the three things or like, is that a sufficient read? I don't know.
I want to make sure we cover all bases.
I'm gonna do no work today on the ads.
So you the ShakePay ad? Too. Get the card.
Oh, here we go. This is what people come to the channel for. What about the card? What do you mean? Talk about the card now.
You can spend your Canadian dollars on your ShakePay balance, get up to 2% cash back in Bitcoin for the first 5,000, and then 1% cash back in Bitcoin for everything after that. And unlike all those other shitty credit cards that are like, oh, you get 4% on gas, but like 0.2% on everything else, there's none of that nonsense. You just get 1-2% on everything on ShakePay. So, yeah.
My preferred.
Glenn, take it away.
They're ShakePay. So as you use your ShakePay Visa card, you potentially could get the whole purchase returned back to you with the ShakePay promotion. And that will be returned back to you in Bitcoin. So that's one of the two things.
Did you see some guy got like $1,500 ShakePay the other day?
What the other day?
Yeah, it was insane.
What did he buy? I'd love to know. And the last thing is the Shake Squads, where you could team up with up to four other ShakePay users. And anytime anybody in the Shake Squad uses the ShakePay Visa card, 42 Satoshis are going to be rewarded to everybody in this squad. And we'll be talking about the squad in a little bit today. We do have one other sponsor that, you know, what else are we going to do with all the Bitcoin that you purchase? Why not put it on the Ledin platform and earn some interest? And if you use our referral code below, and if you dump 150,000 sats or 75 USDC on their platform, keep it on there for 15 consecutive days. They'll give you 10 USDC added to your Ledin account. Not too bad. Also, you could borrow against your Bitcoin. So if you have a large stack of Bitcoin, you don't want to sell it, you have some bills to pay, Ledin is there to help you out. They could help you borrow against it with a 50% loan to value. Also, if you think the price of Bitcoin is going up, it hasn't in the past couple of days, but it should, shouldn't it? You could do the B2X option where you could double up your Bitcoin stack. Time the market correctly, and you pull out. Don't be an Elon and leave it in there. You pull out, you're good to go. You will now have more Bitcoin as a result of timing the market correctly and using B2X. And finally, they have the Bitcoin-backed mortgages. These are an industry first, but unfortunately not available in all jurisdictions. So make sure if you do want to take advantage of the Bitcoin-backed mortgages, take a look at the LendIn website, see where it's being offered. But also when you're there, check what is the interest for the savings and borrowing rates, because those change on a month-to-month basis.
Okay. That's good work by the two of you, by the way. I'm talking to the chat here, just enjoying sipping my chocolate milk, which, by the way, I always mix with white milk. I never just have it straight chocolate. It's too sweet, I find. But anyway, Len and Julian, you know, we didn't tell you this before, but Len, we got a giveaway that we're going to announce tonight with our sponsor, ShakePay. Do you have the merch handy, sir?
No, I do not. Let me go grab it.
Okay, this is great. We're on a real roll tonight. You, is it? That's not the hat. It's not the hat. The CBP and ShakePay collabed on a really nice t-shirt that we're going to be giving away.
Oh,
and so show it up to the, bring it up to the camera. Yeah. Bring it up to the camera. Go. Come on, Len, bring it closer. Let's see the front. That's see the front. Here we go. See the front of that shirt. So we got the To the Bitcoin Golden Age that became so popular. I think, Julian, you got one of those shirts for sure.
Yeah.
Me and Len both got one. And now we're going to give a few away. I think we got about 24 or 25 of them to give away. I'm not sure exactly how many. Wow.
That's awesome.
So, yeah, we're happy about that. The first contest, okay, the first thing that's going to get you one of these shirts is next Monday. Excuse me. We're going to look at and ask you to show us who or which Shake Squad has the most earned sats as of next Monday mid show or something like that. I don't know exactly when we'll pull. So you got to be here to know when to get in the draw, and you got to have the most earned sats for your whole squad. Okay. So it's not between now and Monday. It's not between Wednesday and Monday. It's since the promotion started until next Monday. Okay. Whoever is here in the chat, when we draw, send me a tweet or something. I'll put a tweet up, or I'll schedule a tweet for sometime during the show. And we'll talk about it on the show. And then all the members of that team, all five of you, will get a shirt, okay? We'll pay for the shipping. ShakePay will pay for the shipping. And you'll have a nice shirt to wear to the gym or to bed or whatever, whatever you guys want to do. So
are you guys in the same Shake Squad?
No.
I'm only on a 4-person Shake Squad. I'm barely even contributing to my Shake Squad. Sad but true.
I think mine's up to 6,800 sats, so it's not bad.
That's what you got so far, 6,800?
Yeah,
my Shake Squad. My Shake Squad so far has earned 16,464.
Okay, you guys are going out.
I think
I'm probably carrying the weight for my Shake Squad.
My friends use the card
spending
a lot.
Money.
Yeah.
So if you guys in the chat or listening on audio after the stream are interested in a shirt, get on your friends, start spending money, okay? Abuse the self-checkout thing. If you got to buy groceries, like, run to the self-checkout and just rip transaction after transaction. Whatever you want to do, I don't care. I don't know if ShakePay cares. I guess I'm going to find out after we release this. But whoever's got the most sats gets a shirt for every member of the team. Len, I think I got that right. Do you want to add anything before we get into the news?
Nah, that's it. But I have two other things I want to nail off our checklist here. Number one is the podcasting 2.0 sats that we're getting. Again, we'll continue to give it to Bitcoin Acasti for the next 7 days. For those unaware, they're building a Bitcoin community in South Africa, and they plan to build a Bitcoin economy, hopefully with using Lightning over there. So it's a great way to donate your sats. If you send it to us, we send it directly to them. And so it's going to be used wisely and to help out some people that, well, they're trying to build a Bitcoin community. And the second thing, Joey, the price of Bitcoin. We haven't yet even touched that, but in Canadian dollars, nail it off, the 27,670 in Canuck bucks.
Bro, you caught me with my proverbial pants.
I tried to give you as much time as possible by starting.
21,244 US. Let's run the video and then we're getting into the news. Get ready for a good show, everybody. I promise you're going to like it. Len, the trap drums never disappoint. What's the first story, my man?
Well, this past week, we got some interesting news from the OCS in that they're going to be instituting some limits around, from what I understand, it's $30,000 for purchasing stuff not named Bitcoin, Litecoin, Bitcoin Cash, and Ethereum. So if you want to purchase something not named that, unfortunately, you're going to be limited to $30,000 per annum. I'm not sure if you could then go to a different exchange or whatever. Maybe Julian can give us a little bit of insight for this. But this is a bombshell because it seems like they're knocking at the doors for maybe doing something for Bitcoin that won't be very good in the future. But Julian, I want to pass it over to you. If you could give us some insight, what this is, what it's all about, how it's going to be impacting people. Maybe give some perspective what's going to happen moving forward.
Where to start? Shitty legislation. First of all, I'm super curious, and like, I don't want to knock on Canadian Bitcoin exchanges, but like, how many people actually use these platforms, I wonder, versus just going on like the FTX or Binance route or just ShakePay? I've always had this like weird thing that I don't know where the Canadian crypto platforms really fit in, because they have like nowhere near the liquidity of the American ones, which most Canadians can sign up for. Maybe not anymore. I think that might have changed. And then the ease of use they don't have compared to ShakePay, but whatevs. Okay, so I guess I'll just break down my understanding of it. Basically, if you're not Bitcoin, Ethereum, Litecoin, or Bitcoin Cash, you can only make $30,000 of net purchases in the next 12 months, which basically means if you buy like $1,000 of Solana, you're down to $29,000 Canadian left in your limit. But if you sell that crypto for any profit or whatever, I believe that limit gets deducted by the amount that you sell, which I don't quite understand how that works. But I guess basically, like, if you're a shitty trader, you can essentially just... Actually, no, the shittier of a trader you are, the worse it is for your limit, because if you sell at a loss, then you don't get all the limit back that you spent buying something. So that's a mess. Anyways, so if you're a retail investor, it's 30,000. There's a term called eligible investor. I don't know what kind of check boxes you have to tick off to be an eligible investor. And then accredited investor, you don't have any limits. My take on this too is, like, I don't know if you guys have ever signed up for anything that requires you to be an accredited or an eligible investor, but all they ask you is like, what is your net worth? How many assets do you have? And then every now and then you'll get one that's like, maybe show us a bank statement or show us a picture of your Quest trade or whatever. It's really hard to prove how much like net worth someone has, and it's very easy to Photoshop. So this is a very toothless, I think, type of legislation. If somebody is really, really wanting to get past these limits, they can just drop some documents. And I don't even know if that would be considered illegal. You know, I guess it's a form of forgery, but this is not like a federal or even provincial law. I think this is just like a limit that's imposed on exchanges. There's no punishment for breaking it, from what I understand. Not that I condone illegal activity, but what else? I find it interesting that like it's Bitcoin, Ethereum, Litecoin, and Bitcoin Cash. It feels like this is a policy that was made in like 2017. Because the only things that these things have in common that I understand, and maybe this makes a bit of sense, is that these are all the coins that were on Quadriga CX, and OSC has been going after Quadriga and trying to get to the bottom of the whole thing there. And for some reason, they're still sitting on $40 million of cash that Quadriga did have for the last 2 years. There's been zero updates. Not that I'm a part of that or anything. No, I totally am. And I'm wondering why that wasn't dispersed yet or just put in a Bitcoin. But yeah, like, I don't know. Like they think Bitcoin, Ethereum, Litecoin, Bitcoin Cash are not securities. So, you know, those are fine to invest in. I don't know why you wouldn't just put like Dogecoin in there either. That's also like a proof of work thing, if that's kind of what the barrier to entry is. But Ethereum won't be proof of work. So I don't know. This whole thing's this whole thing's a mess. Also, like, and I don't want to grill individual exchanges too much, but Newton, when they tweeted this out, this was on August 16th, they were like, registration is intended to help protect crypto investors like yourself and to ensure investors are aware of the risks associated with investing in crypto assets. I don't know how like preventing people from buying up to a certain amount, which is also like a lot. Like, I don't know who has like $30,000 a year to put into like shit coins, but it's not the average retail trader. I don't know what that does to actually prevent you or help you understand the risks associated either. Also, I don't think this is enforceable across different exchanges. So you could just make an exchange at like any one of these, you know, certified things. And like, you know, you can hit your limit on Newton and then you can just go to BitBuy. It doesn't cross over. Maybe they'll implement that somehow in the future as the OSC does try and implement more of these things. But as far as I'm concerned, it's kind of dumb. And that's just the way the OSC rolls.
I had not thought about that Quadriga angle, that it's the same four tokens that Quadriga had on their platform. But that's an interesting thought. I don't know what that means. And also,
technically, like Ethereum Classic was also on there, and I think Bitcoin Gold. But yeah, those were
people. I think they just forgot
about those. Yeah,
I totally forgot about that. I don't know if it was you, Julian, or someone else pointed this out to me, that this sort of buy sell, you know, influence the room, quote unquote, you have left in your cap is sort of reminiscent of a TFSA, right? It's a similar structure, right? Do you think, and Len, you can chime in here too. Do you think that this is going, I mean, there's some case to be made. I personally don't feel this way, unfortunately. I doubt you guys do either, but we'll just entertain this anyway for the people who are listening and watching. Do you think that there's some potential this is going to lead to a good place where people are allowed to invest in these things, you know, in this much the same way that your TFSA works, where you have like some kind of rolling cap or something like that. And everything else, like you mentioned, Bitcoin, Bitcoin Cash, all that other stuff is unlimited buys, unlimited sells, because presumably someone somewhere views them as not securities, or the people who are writing legislation have bags of all that garbage. Or do you think that it's going to go the other way and the 30K limit is going to start with just those other kind of, you know, that other swath of tokens and then eventually make its way to Bitcoin? What do you guys think?
You go first, Julian.
What do I think? It's so hard when people make regulations. I was just following what was going on. Like, I think Gary Gensler posted something today about how like we shouldn't make different laws for crypto. We should just treat them under like existing frameworks. And I'm like, well, yeah, like some of it makes sense, but also like, you know, a security benefits, you know, the people who create it are seeking to make a profit and seeking to drive the value of it. And like, you know, where do like NFTs fall under that, for instance, right? So yeah, your question is like, is this like a slippery slope? Like we start with 30K and then it creeps into Bitcoin eventually, and maybe they start lowering the limit even further. I don't know. I also know that this is like very hard to enforce in the long run, because people will just find ways to get their crypto P2P, and that really can't be stopped. I know that like it can be stopped on the bank level. Like they can prevent people from like e-transferring to randos to buy cryptocurrency or whatever, but people always find ways around this. So it just, again, it's very toothless. In my opinion, I think all legislation on this stuff is, you know, and especially as like, there's not anything close to this going on in the US. So then, you know, I can just buy something when I'm, you know, visiting in America down there, or I can just find a way to use like that route, or I can use DEXs. I don't know. I don't know what their thing is. Here's my take on the whole thing too, is there is, these exchanges in Canada, like BitBuy and Newton, they really want to cozy up with regulators and work with them, because they think that their angle for getting new customers is, we're regulated, we're a safe place to go. Canada has this like terrible history because of Quadriga for, you know, having rug pulls. And then we just had a wave of all the yield platforms get it. So all these big companies, and you can hear it because Kevin O'Leary has a stake in all these, they all want to be approved by regulators. They really want to suck up to regulators. They want to work with them. And so they're going to implement things like this. They're not going to challenge them, you know, on a legislative basis. They're just going to implement these things because they want to get their foot in the door and kind of establish themselves. Unfortunately, I don't actually think it really matters to most people. I think they think it does. I think maybe it might matter for like the stock price of the parent company, but ultimately, I don't think it really matters to users. So yeah,
what does matter to it's to perhaps institutional investors and maybe even banks who may want to start issuing some of these digital assets to their customers, and they would probably use one of these regulated or highly regulated exchanges versus something that is not. But I mean, to go back, the Gensler's tweet was, it's going the wrong way, and look at what's coming out of the UK, and they're creating this whole new asset class, which is hopefully going to encompass everything that is Bitcoin and anything that could be even remotely close to it. And you're right, in terms of this is a toothless type of legislation or policy, because you could get around it easily. But what they're trying to do is try to set up barriers for these digital assets based on the tools that they have. And we all know that they're ancient tools and they just don't work in this framework. You can easily get around it, but still they're going to try to continually put up more and more barriers for us to buy into Bitcoin. I don't think it's going to end at these shit coins. It's eventually going to bleed into Bitcoin and everything else. There's no way it's going to stop. I think this is just one way that they could try to figure out how it works and then eventually make it work into everything else. Especially as you talked about the proof of work stuff. Proof of work seems to be a dirty word when you mention it anywhere within politics and with government officials, because they don't like the fact that it uses energy, stranded energy, but that's a whole different topic altogether. But it's almost like it's low hanging fruit. You could say, look, carbon usage is bad. Energy usage is bad. Let's attack this proof of work stuff that's using so much energy, and we could then save the planet. Also, at the same time, we could save our currency and make your savings and your wealth much greater as a result. It's all a bunch of hogwash. It's garbage. I don't buy it. I don't believe that they're doing anything for the investors. They're doing it, or people that the end users. It's all for themselves. They're trying to save their own necks, plain and simple.
Yeah, I think it's like, and I'll go quick here. I think it's really, really important that us as people who are talking about this all the time get in the face of politicians and regulators to try and explain what makes proof of work fundamentally different from everything else that's going on. Because initially in the first wave of like crypto, where it was like 2013, everyone was starting new proof of work blockchains and they all fizzled out because that model doesn't work when you don't have the computing power. And then Ethereum came along, everyone just issues tokens. You don't need to have all that energy, right? You can just, it's like issuing shares. And now we're moving to a spot where the biggest, shitcoin blockchain, which is Ethereum, is now moving to a proof of stake model that's not backed up by energy, that can now be censored. And I think it's going to become increasingly important to really push this differentiation of Bitcoin from all other crypto assets. It's the number one misconception I have when I just talk to ordinary people, is they just think, oh, Bitcoin is just one of these cryptocurrencies. Luckily, I think the space is dividing itself. I think Bitcoin is standing out as like the proof of work blockchain. This is its own unique thing, and everything else is moving down like the token route. We got to get in the face of people and really explain the difference, in order for legislators to not just like bundle up all these things in a one package.
I think that's true. Len, you want to top it off there? You got anything else to add?
I just want to say one thing, and you'd mentioned it, the proof of stake stuff. I totally didn't come to grips the fact that this could be part of censorship, that they could use proof of stake as a way to censoring transactions or even censoring particular wallets. I never clued into that until very recently. It's a very scary world we're going down. If people are going to be saying this is the wagon we're going to hitch our wagon to, because it's going to come up, it's very fiat, and we don't want that. We want to have something where we have a decentralized network, where we know if we do a transaction, it's going to go through. We don't need a centralized body to censor any of our transactions, our wallets, or anything along those lines. Stay away from that garbage. And this whole thing about these regulators putting all these barriers for shitcoins, it's not going to end there. There's no fucking way they're going to stop at a 30K for those shitcoins. They're going to lower the limits, I think, eventually. It's going to hit Bitcoin. And even if they don't lower the limits, 30,000 today is going to be worth 30,000 tomorrow. Think about it. And it's going to be further on. It's like that. What is it? The $10,000 limit of going to the States. I think that's if you carry cash over time, that just gets harder and harder to meet that. I mean, who carries $10,000 cash? But eventually $10,000 will just be enough to fill your tank.
Well,
I don't know. It drives me bonkers. Like they keep putting in these new fucking rules.
Well, let's run the math on this real quick, because you're right. This actually does hurt investors more than anything. If you look at it from the sense of like, there's no way to make back your losses if you do claim your losses, right? Let's just say you spent $30,000 buying Solana at the top, right? You bought it at like 360, let's just say Canadian a pop, and it's dropped 90%, right? And then you sell it. You can get $3,000 of your limit back. So you only have $3,000 left in the year that you can use to buy any cryptocurrencies. What does that do? I mean, like it hurts investors. It makes it very hard to move into something else. Now you can put as much as you want into Bitcoin, for instance, but it destroys the ability for people to casually trade crypto in Canada, especially because most investors just lose money. So
may I make even one prediction here? When people start losing the cap that they have in a given year, they might be more opt to make more risky moves.
They're going to make risky moves to try and get the money back with that 3,000. Yep, exactly. Yeah. You're spot on with that too. This is not really on this show. We say all the time, it's, you know, disappointing, but it's really not surprising. This is legislation that's come out. You put it well, Julian, I think when you said that, like, this is something you would have expected to see in 2017, 2018, that kind of bull run, right? Not now, where you find yourself in a situation where the ecosystem is matured to the point where, you know, I think the total market cap, even in this bear market of Bitcoin plus all the other garbage, I think still tops a trillion. You know, like when are these guys going to learn that the tools are outdated, the minds are outdated as well. And this is the kind of stuff we find ourselves with. Julian, I'll let you give the closing comment here if you want, brother.
Closing comment. I don't know. I think it's pretty interesting that we have this, I guess you would call it like a conservative leadership race coming up. First time I've ever voted in like a conservative leadership race or any leadership race for any party. I voted for Pierre Poilievre, and I know some people are like not conservative. They might think that's crazy, but I'm doing it for the sheer fact that it seems to be he's the only person that understands Bitcoin even a little bit and the importance of having, you know, a currency that's backed by something hard. And it's looking more likely that we are going to have a major political candidate in Canada running against, you know, the next general election, which will be in like 2025, unless there's a vote of no confidence. That's awesome. So, you know, this is a step back for sure for Canadians, but in terms of where we are versus the US, you know, we have much younger politicians. It's not the gerontocracy, but we're starting to get people in a major political party that really understand the value of Bitcoin. And I think that's going to only grow over the next few years. So got to look on the bright side. That's all.
I love it. I love it. No, that's good. Good closing comment. Julian, tell people where they can find you, what you're doing. I'll note here before you go into it that on that day when this stuff was released, Julian was one of the first people who had done the digging, sort of discerning, figuring out what was important, what was not, pulled the Newton thing. So definitely worth checking him out. Where can they find you, brother?
I appreciate it. Yeah, I'm all over TikTok, Instagram, Twitter. You just look up Kinetic Finance. I make a mix of short 1 minute TikTok-y videos on Bitcoin and money, ones that you can share with your friends. They don't have to be like, you know, 10 feet deep in podcasts or Bitcoin standard books to understand them. I also do a live show every Friday where I just shoot the shit, the news like you guys do, but not as high production value. And then I do a lot of other little videos. I just did an interview with Greg Foss. We have a bunch of other ones coming up. The whole purpose of the content I'm making is to try and motivate more people to get out and teach about Bitcoin from your unique perspective. Everyone has a different perspective. We've had all these great shows like this one pop up over the last few years, and it's going to continue. And, you know, we learn so much through things like this, and it's time we get out and share it, because that's really how we get to the Bitcoin standard, not by keeping it all in here or in here.
So just love to it. Give you an idea, our production value went up after CNN Plus decided to close shop, because we had got so much equipment on the cheap as a result of that. So that's thanks to them. Yeah, so thank you, CNN Plus, for giving us the equipment on the cheap. So yeah,
you're the best, Julian. You're the best.
I got all mine from Quibi, so
we're all beneficiaries of this. Great news.
Yeah. Okay, that's Kinetic Finance, Julian. Thanks again, brother. We appreciate it. You're welcome back anytime. Take care of yourself, peace, right?
Man. Thanks for having me on.
Cheers.
Joey, let's just keep things moving along, because there's a lot to talk about in this show. Unless you want to just...
I don't. I think Julian did a good job explaining that. And like I said on Twitter, the day that that stuff came out, he was one of the first people to kind of pick it apart. So yeah, glad to have him on. It's good value add. And he does do a good job with those 1 minute videos. It's a good way to tell people, like he was saying, who don't understand the nature of the issue, but understand something is wrong. You know what I mean? And there's a lot of people like that. We've talked about those kinds of people on the show before. So his stuff's definitely worth sharing. Although I take offense to the 10 feet deep in the podcast, Julian. I still see you in the green room there, 10 feet deep. Unbelievable.
Joey, let's keep things moving along. And we'll talk about the economy, Joey. We do this on a weekly basis because there's just always so much material to talk about. And remember when inflation was reported as going down in July? And
simpler people, times, buddy. Yeah, simpler times.
Just a few weeks ago, and people in power, they were celebrating like they got a new shipment of baby formula from Switzerland. Well, the celebrations may have been premature, because we're getting more and more info about the economy, and things, of course, are not looking good. And we could lead off with housing. And this is always a good indication of which way the economy as is heading. And a spoiler alert, it's a fucking pathetic. So the July housing starts are down 9.6% month over month, and building permits are down 1.3% month over month. And for those wondering, the construction sector make up a little bit more than 4% of the overall GDP for the US. So when a good slice of the GDP is showing signs of weakness, I would say that's bad. But since the recession has been redefined, I'm sure they'll spin this as a W for them. And how about sales of homes? Redfin, they're reporting that about 63,000 home purchase agreements were called off for the month of July. Let that sink in. And this equates to about 16% of homes under contract for that month. And also from Redfin, they're pretty good at giving us these stats.
Are we getting a sponsorship from these guys? I feel like we don't really talk about, there's not too many platforms we talk about more than Redfin on this program. We guys need to pay us.
The way housing markets are going, they're going to need a bailout from us. I don't think they'll be able to sponsor anybody. But according to them, and I'm going to quote, the share of home for sales with price drops reached 21% in July, and that's the highest share in Redfin data going back to 2012. So people, they're trying to get rid of inventory right now, and unfortunately, they're selling it at a lower price than they originally were asking for. And this creates a cascade effect as people that are looking to buy, they look at something as a comparable and look at recent home sales. And if the price is lower, well, it just goes down from there. So we have construction going down, renovations going down, and home sales, all numbers that are not going up, they're going down. I think, Joey, it's a good time to start short selling Home Depot or Rona stocks because things are not looking good. As for credit, and I love talking about credit, I don't like reporting on it these days because the outlook is pretty bleak, but the topic of credit is such a fiat tool, and it's a good talking point for Bitcoiners. And the amount of credit card debt in 2022 has climbed to $887 billion. This is not the highest from what I can tell by absolute numbers. And it's not even, it's very, very far away when you consider even the fact that the US dollar has been devalued in the past 2.5 years at a rapid pace. The peak was in Q1 2022, where it topped $900 billion. But at that time, $900 billion could buy you about 2/3 of the Apple market by market cap. Now it'll get you maybe 1/3 of that. That just illustrates how much the dollar has declined in value. And that number of $887 billion I quoted, it's growing rapidly. It's going to soon pass $900 billion, and this is probably going to happen by my estimation at Q3 2022, and that's another milestone that we're going to be very proud of. And another proud stat we should be very happy of: 41% of all credit card holders, they're holding or carrying a balance. 41%, that's not very that's incredibly high.
And you just know that balance is not 10 bucks.
It's not. It's, I mean? It's hundreds, thousands, if not 10. And think of it, how many billions of dollars are then held on credit. I don't have the exact number. We got to just kind of figure it out. On a month-to-month with a balance, and money is just being pissed away for paying on the high interest fees. And with the average interest rates for credit cards in the neighborhood of around 16%, you could easily see how much money is going out the door just to service this credit card debt. And even according to the Fed's own data, the 30-day delinquency, and this is the number of folks who are currently at least 30 days late on their credit card payments, this number has rose from 1.63% to 1.73% in the first quarter of 2022. Yes, that's a small uptick, but that was from Q1, and that is the most recent information that I have available. Expect this number to go up, and go up substantially, as the debt gets piled on, interest rates rise, and people can continue to experience more month at the end of their money. And we cannot go by without talking about student debt. And that's one of our favorite topics of this show. And the student debt now sits at approximately $1.7 trillion, give or take, depending on who you ask. And that's about 2 times the credit card debt. Expect the Biden administration, they're probably going to continue the pause on student loan repayments. And this has been done so since the beginning of March of 2020. And with about 45% of outstanding debt for the student loans held by 10% of the borrowers only owing $80,000 or more. How the fuck do you gather so much fucking debt? 10%, they just incredible amount. These probably are out of state schools they're attending to try to get this college experience that they so love to get. And here they are now swimming in debt. But you know what? Debt. The student debt, it's some people think they were doing too little. In fact, from CNN, and I quote this from them, these are not my words, this is from CNN. a majority of Democrats in a May CNN poll, 56%, and an even wider majority of self-described liberals, 69%, said the government is doing too little on student loan debt. What the fuck else could they do besides just delaying payment on it? I don't understand. But I understand that young people, they were dealt a shitty hand, but it's a reminder that if anything is going to be done with student debt with respect to forgiveness, it's essentially socializing the expenses along with it. And you're going to expect Biden to do something this week, probably going to kick the road down, kick the can down the road for another pausing of this payment of student loans. It's going to be just old hat for him. And the total U.S. consumer debt is now approaching $16 billion. And we just experienced the largest quarterly rate since 2007. So things are not looking good. The majority of this debt, the U.S. consumer debt, it's housing debt. And which could be argued this is acceptable if the housing market is going up. But it's not. U.S. July existing home sales down 5.9%. And another way to help illustrate that the soft housing market is the total mortgage demand. Another way to show that the housing market is soft is the total mortgage demand is now very low. In fact, it hit 22-year low. And it's even lower, this metric, than the real estate crash in 2008 and 2009. So that tells you something. And we keep talking about a trillion here and a trillion there, Joey. We're losing perspective on this number. And I just want to rehash this. I talked about this many, many moons ago. If I give you $1 million a day, every day, for 2,000 years, that still does not equate to $1 trillion. That's around $750 billion. So $16 trillion is an absolutely monstrous number. But remember, we're not in a recession, right? But don't ask New York City Mayor Eric Adams. He fucking came out
this past week. This is unbelievable.
He came out this past week. I love this. He has declared the U.S. has entered into a recession and Wall Street is collapsing. I love it. And I'm pretty sure from this comment, he's going to be off Janet Yellen's Christmas card list. Also of note, Target or Target, depending on what you want to call it, they've reported profit drops of 90% over the last quarter. This isn't some regional chain. This is a nationwide type of, like, they have stores nationwide, 1,900 stores. It's a good indicator how consumer spending has changed over the last 6 months. Stock market, well, let's see how things are going there. The number of people that had at least $1 million in their Fidelity 401k accounts plunged 29% in the second quarter. That's from the company data that's shown. Car market, well, car repossessions are on the rise. We talk about this all the time. It's now being reported that it's not only the subprime borrowers that are defaulting on loans, but it's also people with good credit. They just don't have the means to spend for these bills. All this shit reminds me of 2008. But another thing from 2008, let's see what's going on. We have from Bloomberg, the U.S. mortgage industry is now seeing its first lenders go out of business.
I know.
This is after a sudden spike of lending rates and waves of failure that could be coming. This is crazy stuff. 2008 all over again. And what does all this data mean for the Fed? Are they going to start reversing course? They're going to start raising rates. QE is going to ramp up. They've painted themselves into a corner. There's no obvious way out. But I have one brief story before I pass it on to you, Joey. And I want to talk about a story in the Atlantic. In fact, sorry, across the Atlantic, in the UK, in fact. Well, in the UK, they have this new initiative. There's an agreement between something called a supermarket chain called Iceland and a charity-owned lender. They have created a new initiative where they're going to be handing out interest-free loans for people who need help with food bills. These microloans are going to be available on preloaded cards and with repayments set to £10 a week. And during this pilot, consumers will pay what they quote a minimal amount of interest on the loans. But Iceland, this is a supermarket chain, had decided to invest an undisclosed amount in making the loans completely interest-free for the national rollout. They are trying to find ways to make people feed their families with interest-free loans, and the interest is being put in the market, so hopefully they can make ends meet like that. They're trying to find creative ways to make sure people have food in their bellies. They fucked up. I don't want to say who did fucked up. We know who it is, but they fucked up royally. And so many people are feeling the pinch as a result. It's going to get so much worse, Joey.
Did you see the German gas prices, yeah, like the futures on gas? It's 14 times what it was 6 months ago. How the front door are you going to be able to afford your monthly expenses at 14x the energy cost for your household? What's the plan for that? Okay. And that's just Germany. Germany's a gong show. Okay. Turns out that your manufacturing sector, when you're deprived of cheap energy, you can't do all the things you were doing before and you pay the price. Before I start talking about some of the stuff I've seen about Canada, which is, you know, allegedly what this show is about, I want to talk about a few things that you said. This you know, sort of inverse Pareto principle on this, on the student loans, how 10% of the people are having 80% of the problems. You know, I would just posit to you that not only is the third year interpretive dance class very expensive, Len, but also the Starbucks that you're getting every day on the way there is getting more expensive as well. I saw Pierre Poilievre today talking about a coffee is 14% more expensive than last year. Interesting synergy in the Biden White House between the extension of the COVID emergency, student loan repayments being halted or frozen, and Fauci's retirement today. These guys are going to extend the COVID emergency while their chief advisor and COVID czar, those are someone else's words, sure as fuck not mine, COVID czar steps down in the midst of this emergency. And I think because of that emergency extension, Len, they're going to continue to kick back those loan repayments till after the midterms. To me, it seems like that's the most logical strategy. I would love to hear the counterpoint for that, but pretty clearly, this is exactly what the problem is for them. I'll note, as far as the you know, sort of credit vehicles available to people and this extra chunk of debt being carried by the average person, I got a message in my email inbox the other day. It said I had a secure message in my TD account. And so TD, much like many other banks, has this kind of messaging interface where they send you notifications about the products you're using. So for example, if my mortgage is coming up to expiry, they'll send me something and say, you have to, you know, start coming in to talk about your next term, blah, 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 or this will happen, that'll happen. For the first time in a long time, I got one about my credit card. And the thing was a new set of rate policies for the card after you miss two consecutive payments. So the interest rate for cash back, I was trying to pull it up here during the show, but this is not the computer I use normally, so I couldn't find it. But the interest rate for cash back, I think, is normally about 21 or 22%, if I have that right. Now, if you miss the first payment, it jumps to 29%. How's that?
That's for cash back. So I'm not sure how many people use that.
How many people do you think who are getting interest-free loans from the grocery store are not using cash back? You think that Venn diagram is pretty close to a perfect circle?
Yeah, I'm just not... I'm just saying,
this is a directional signpost, in my opinion, because they're not getting the money that they're being told they're supposed to get, right? The minimum payment or whatever you're supposed to pay on your credit card. I don't know, because I don't carry a credit card. I just pay whatever's on the credit card, right? But I'm pretty sure that you have to at least pay the minimum to save yourself some kind of penalty with these guys. Apparently the penalty wasn't harsh enough. Otherwise, why would they increase the cost to the average borrower? So that's another signpost. You mentioned the soft housing market. Now, I think you undersold it. I think if that housing market gets any softer, Len, we're going to see it on a Cialis commercial with its wife in a bathtub on a cliff, some kind of mountainside cliff or something, in a clawfoot tub. Because it seems to me that that really is falling apart. There's a house in my neighborhood, maybe not quite my neighborhood. It's like a couple of kilometers away, but it's in the same, you know, sort of region of the city as me. Listed for $1 million about 2 or 3 months ago and sold for $725 last week. 25% haircut, basically, that's from the list price. Mm-hmm. How's that feel? Universities and housing, I think that's another topic. Boomer mentioned it in the chat, and I've been talking about it on Twitter with Nick Caradza, you know, who we'll be talking to on Thursday when we go on their show. Universities have a role to play in the soft housing market. They are minting money with subsidized loans from the Canadian government to bring in international students, house them, driving rents up, causing scarcity in the housing market. And they don't have a price to pay for it. They're not supporting more housing initiatives. They're not doing anything. It's all NIMBY this. We need more residence buildings. McMaster in Hamilton tried to buy up that city block that the LRT people ended up buying years ago because they wanted to put up more residence buildings. And they did end up scoring a residence building right in the middle of downtown on Bay and Queen, or Bay and King, I'm pretty sure, about 5 years ago that they completed, I think, 2 years ago. This stuff is only going one way. Now, you know, you mentioned a couple of things about sort of the reporting on these things, right? Stories from across the pond and whatnot. I want to talk a bit about what I've seen in the last couple of days from Torstar and The Globe. who are very conflicted because on one hand, I think they are state stenographers, specifically for parties with a left inclination. And on the other hand, they're also these sort of communist responsibility averse sympathizers for people who don't want to work and want to bang on their drums all day, as a wise man once said. I saw in the Globe today a story about inflation slowing down, but has a long way to go. At the same time, I saw a story in the Torstar paper about how Tiff Macklem needs to stay in his lane when it comes to raising wages for average workers, average employees. Now, in the Torstar article, or in the Globe article, I should say, some interesting stuff here, okay? They talk about how inflation has slowed, has a long way to go, blah, blah, blah. You know, they talk about the decrease, but they mention here, I think almost unbelievably bluntly, that the problem with the inflation numbers is that gasoline prices were the main reason, dropping 9%, but rent, natural gas, and grocery all increased, and that the bank's 2% target for late 2024 means that more hikes are going to have to come. Now, I personally think that we're about to enter, and I'm not. This is not my thought. I agree with a lot of smart people who have been talking about this for some time. We're about to enter a high inflation regime where 2% is no longer the target. The target's going to be 4% or 5% or 6%. And I can't wait to see the alchemy these guys try and, you know, employ to turn coal into gold during that process. But they're going to do something crazy when it comes to the messaging, when it comes to the propaganda, when it comes to potentially also the bank accounts, people who are feeling differently. This Tiff Macklem thing, which I know we're going to talk about because he's probably your no-coiner. He's mine too. So we'll really put a stake in his neck at that point of the show. But, you know, if you go back to January, December 21, 22, around that time frame, he is confident that inflation is about to come down when it was like 3%, 4%, and talks about how there's no worry about a wage inflation thing because a wage inflation spiral because wages usually lag inflation and this is not going to be a prolonged phenomenon, blah, blah, blah. How much more incorrect could that guy have been? And now worse, he's getting in front of labor unions who and telling them that they can't raise wages because it'll cause more problems. And that inflation is going to come down shortly. Like, inflation coming down doesn't mean prices return to pre-COVID levels. He can't think that anyone believes this, surely. But yet here we are, you know, on this program, others, I see it on Twitter all the time. There's this misconception that prices coming down is the same as inflation dropping or the inflation totals dropping month over month or year over year. It's insane to think that this is the case, but it seems to be what people are reporting. Renting, this is another good piece of this Globe article. According to personal finance rules, monthly rental costs should account for no more than 30% of gross pay. 30% of gross, Len, 30, how, if your mortgage was 30% of your gross pay, how much more would it be than what you're paying now? Gross pay, 30% of your gross pay. Not
even depends where you live. They're talking about rent. Well, if you're living in Toronto and you're renting and it is substantial amount. It is 30% or more for people. It is significant.
It's way more. But like 30% of your gross should not be the rule. 30% of your gross is the rule you have to set or pretend you set when the number is spiraling out of control. 30% of your gross is a lot of fucking money. It's a lot of fucking money.
That's what people have been doing.
You up at night. And
imagine you bought a house recently and it was seven figures, which that's the case homes were.
Yeah.
I can't do the math quickly in my head, but if two people are working and they put the minimum deposit down, are we approaching 50% of their gross pay? Or maybe not 30-40% of their gross pay. I would think that we're in that range. That's a lot
because your net is only about 70% of your gross.
Yes.
So like it's an insane number and it's an insane ratio. In Vancouver, the average rent to income ratio is up at 53%. In Toronto, it's 48%. And you know where it's 40%? Unexpected 40% here sneaking in under the gun. Guess where in this country 40% on average of your gross income goes to your rent. Your rent, not your property tax, not your fucking all that shit. You're a renter. You're a peon. Guess where it's 40%?
Hit me up.
Fucking Halifax, man.
the East Coast has been going up like crazy in the past little while.
It's nuts. Like that's everywhere. It's completely insane, man. And so you got all these problems kind of popping up everywhere. Now,
and the wages over there are not high. I mean,
exactly. The job market is much tighter. The wages are not as high. It's you know, those really high income earning jobs are not always present in the same numbers they're present here. So let's talk a bit about the reporting on this. Now, as you know, this is a soft spot for me. I have a real problem with the misinformation and bullshit that the media peddles. CNN, next time you stop at a gas station, think of it as a $100 a month tax cut or maybe a $100 a month raise instead of thinking about the gas prices going down. Incredible sort of celebration and handling with kid gloves, the Biden administration. And their you know, quote unquote work, aka releasing the military strategic petroleum reserve. Now, Len, you would think that this would mean that there's some kind of real progress being made on the gas prices. I looked on Y charts to see what the average US retail gas price was. Y charts, great site, by the way. If TradingView doesn't have something, Y charts has it. Y charts, I want you to sponsor the show. Average price in July, maybe just a bit before July, was about $4.80 US per gallon. Right now, the price is $4 a gallon. That's still more than double what it was in January 2020. They're up 100% since January 2020 and calling it, you should be thinking you got a raise. This is, it's insulting, embarrassing, insane, and many other words that I don't want to say on the show because I think I've already uttered a few too many curses for the algorithm to be fond of us. The euro fell below parity today, Len, with the US dollar. Again, the second time in about 3 weeks or 4 weeks this has happened. I don't know where it is now, but at 8:18 this morning, it was at 99 cents. That's a sign of disaster in Europe. The housing thing, here's another one from the Atlantic. A quarter of all single family homes that were sold last year were sold to landlords, aspiring Airbnb tycoons, and other types of investors. All told, nearly a third of American house sales went to people who had no intention of living in them in 2021. Housing crisis, okay? It's knocking on your door if it hasn't already. Now, because there's a midterm coming, we've talked about this a lot, and this, I agree that there's some speculation, certainly some political bias on my part. I'm not going to speak for Len, but there's obviously going to be some public interest polling that becomes very important in the next 60 days-ish, I guess, till the midterm. Should we do like a US midterm live stream? Should we do that? I don't know. We'll talk about it after the show.
No, we'll fucking do it. I'm fucking game. We'll do
that. Yeah, sure. Why not? If we're not doing anything, why not? Right. So this is a poll from 538 run by Nate Silver. Like if you look up Nate Silver on the night Trump won the election, you'll see exactly what this guy thinks of both parties. Voters rank threats to democracy and cost of living as most important issues. How much massaging of the question and nudging do you think that the questionnaire had to do to get the average American voter who's paying twice as much for gas, 50% more for their mortgage because the rates have gone up so much, you know, 10 or 15% more for groceries. They can't afford to send their kids to school. They can't afford to drive their car to work. They can't afford to rent if they're renting. They can't keep a job because, you know, in most democratic cities, there's rampant crime, all manner of things. Okay. The most important issue at the moment, they have it as threats to democracy at 21% of the vote, people who took the questionnaire saying that's it. That is bullshit. It's bullshit. The framing, I would love to see the framing of that question. It's an NBC News survey that was published on, like I said, I think this is 538, just looking at the graphic style, but I wasn't able to pin down a source. But the NBC News is the company who did the survey. This is unfair reporting, number one. And number two, like we talked about before, It's disingenuous to report to people who are looking at these surveys and forming opinions about where the sort of state of the American, what the state of American life is at the moment, that this is the actual answer. It's ridiculous. And so I would just, you know, I'll kick it back to you here. All the stuff you just said about the American economy, we've talked about this a bunch in the last, you know, month or 2 months or 3 months, 6 months, whenever inflation really started to rip. We started talking about this every week because either the Canadian CPI print's on the way or printing, or the American CPI print is on the way or printing, or the jobs numbers, non-farm payrolls, whatever. Something's always coming up that's giving us a picture of what the economy is going to look like in the next, you know, quarter. So my question to you is, what do you think the most insane Biden policy, either coming into the midterms or after the midterms, you know, maybe before let's say before April or May next year, is going to be to try and remedy some of these runaway price spirals that we're seeing?
I can't think of it. It's a tough question to ask me in a spot. I'd really have to rack my brain to come up with something. I've mentioned it earlier, the Fed, and I know that Biden is not the Fed, but the Fed has painted themselves into a corner, and I'm not sure there's no easy way out of this solution. Ditto from the White House. I'm not sure what they could do to try to remedy this and make this in such a way that they could spin it. Things are going to be better in the future, or we're working hard to try to change things. We'll try our best, and we're not going to fuck things up like we did in the past. I can't see them coming up with anything. So I don't know. I mean, you asked me that question. Do you have anything that you may? Do you have any idea?
I do. And we've talked about it before. We talked about it before. You and me have talked about the articles that are coming out, and you know, I think we both agree are testing the waters for some of these policy ideas. And listening to Market Huddle on the weekend, great Canadian podcast, Patrick Srezna, Kevin Muir, who I'd love to have on the show sometime. I think they're going to experiment with price controls for fuel. I think that's the most likely outcome. I see OPEC today, Dr. Anas talking about how he called this sort of 90% or $90 per barrel price defense that OPEC would come out and play with on the world stage. They seem to be doing that. They're establishing today that they're going to lower production and try and defend that cost to make sure it doesn't go any lower than that $90 level.
Well, how do you get price control? I'm curious that how could you legitimately put in?
It's going to be hard. They can only do it on American soil, right?
Correct.
They can't do it anywhere else.
Even if you do it on American soil, how do you do this without bankrupting yourself?
I don't know.
Oil costs X amount, and this is on a global market. Then you have to refine this. It costs money and energy to do so, and then you have to transport it to the gas station. Another cost. So ultimately, there's a cost built into the base unit of gasoline. And if you're going to try lowering it, something has to pay for that. Who or what is paying for that to lower the cost? And for how long can this be maintained before the fucking thing just goes bankrupt? I'm thinking that the Fed is going to be paying for it ultimately, where the White House keeps selling bonds, the Fed keeps sending money as a result, and then the money then is... I'm quickly trying to connect the dots here. Maybe I'm totally.
Let me try and help you. I think you're on the right track. And Boomer just kind of stimulated me a little bit here too. The talking point that Boomer's saying in the chat that the best talking points for USA and Canada is we're not as fucked as Europe, China, or Japan. He's right. And the dollar is also not as fucked as the euro, yen, or yuan. So is it possible that the US is kind of watching with some intent? This sort of European collapse, knowing that they're going to absolutely torch the dollar in the next 12 to 24 months. And all they have to do is stay above the euro in terms of sort of confidence levels. Like the Dixie just has to stay above, you know, 95, 94, you know, whatever the spot Dixie is today, as the rest of the currencies in Japan and Europe kind of fall apart. Is that maybe the plan? I don't know. Like I'm not macro savvy enough to know whether or not that's the thing. I don't know what else to look at besides the Dixie and stuff about OPEC and production and kind of the seams coming apart in the Eurozone to find that out. There's got to be some other auxiliary measuring sticks that we could look at. I just don't know what they are. But it seems to me that's a possibility, that the U.S. knows they're going to torch the dollar. Like they're going to beat that thing like a rented mule for the next 24 months leading up to the presidential election, potentially in 2024, and just say, look, you don't have to have the dollar if you don't want, but there's no better option. And I think the average person will probably be sympathetic to that message unless Bitcoin really makes a push, or, you know, the other side of that coin would be, hey, look, the US government knows Bitcoin looks good. Europe knows Bitcoin looks good. And they try and squash the thing outright somehow, right? Or do their best to kind of limit interactions with that system. I'll also note that the spot ETF in Bitcoin, we talked about this before too. I don't know if we talked about this on the air or off the air. We may have talked about it off the air actually in one of our, you know, after show discussions. But the reason the spot ETF is not being approved has nothing to do with risk management or anything like that. It's because the spot ETF settles in Bitcoin, presumably. And what the US dollar and the US government does not want is dollars leaving the system and Bitcoin coming back. That's not on the table for them. And so I think that all this stuff together, you know, this is a very loose set of ideas that I'm kind of just, you know, spitting out and trying to piece together in my head as they're rolling off my tongue. I think there's something there. We got a couple of guests coming on, Canadian economy guys. And I'd like to get Dr. Anas on to at some point, maybe Kevin, Patrick, and let's see if we can put this together, in a picture that makes sense for people, because I think there's one there, and maybe we're just not, me and you in our basement's not quite bright enough to figure it out.
When you're talking about there's a spot ETF and when money goes into it, the money doesn't disappear. The money still exists. It's not like it's lost. It's still in circulation. It's just you're buying Bitcoin, which theoretically drives up the price of Bitcoin. But now you have the money still, the US dollar is still in circulation, but the price of Bitcoin theoretically will go up because there's more demand for it. So just because you're buying Bitcoin through a spot ETF doesn't mean the US dollar is being destroyed in the process. It's still in circulation. It's still
not destroyed. What they don't want is that US dollar sort of closed box, right, to be opened and for Bitcoin to be the thing that opens it.
The horse has left the barn already.
I think you're right. Look, you and me, this is like, two priests trying to convert the choir, right, on this show. But like, I'm more interested in this broader picture that we've kind of been talking about for the last 10 minutes, because I think there's something there, but I don't know what it is. And I think, maybe one of these Bear Cave guests can help us pin it down, or someone else can help us pin it down. But I'm dying for some detail there that I just don't see.
We have two guests coming on over the next 2 days. You're gonna want to tune into those shows, because
for sure. We'll talk about the end of the show for sure. I'll give the plug before we sign off on the audio side. But anyway, Len, I don't know what else. If you have anything else to add to that, I'm all
ears. Yeah, there's a few things. So I was jotting down notes. So you're talking about the credit card for taking out money, the cashback, and it's 21% to 29%. Keep in mind, during the last few months, the interest rates have also gone up. They didn't go up that much, but the interest rates have gone up, so borrowing costs have gone up as well. But plus, also, the Canadian dollar has gone down in value too, so they're going to have to try to recoup the cost somewhere. This is one way. In fact, you could look at a story we talked about last week. I know you weren't there, but you brought it up on Twitter with TELUS now going to be putting a 1.5% surcharge in every $100 if you're going to use credit card for payments. So again,
What else can you use to pay? You can't go there with cash.
Correct. I mean, but this is another way of nickel and diming. They're just doing that. And I want to talk about, you mentioned schools. Schools are businesses, and Bitcoin all caps has mentioned that international students pay triple domestic prices, and he's bang on that. And yeah, and gas prices you were talking about has gone up double since 2020 to now. Keep in mind also the US dollar has gone down in value since then. So I'm not trying to justify it, but it may be double in terms of, you're looking at the numbers, but it's not quite double in terms of relative cost, because the dollar today is $2 today is not $1 lower than last time. So, and the report from Silver, this is all shit. This is all entertainment. It's not news. Everything you see from mainstream media, it's all entertainment. They have producers. They have a budget to make things look good. They're trying to make an entertainment. It's not news. It's a show. It's no different than anything else that you watch on Netflix or Disney or wherever the fuck you could watch your stuff. And I have none of that. So that's why I can't give any more more insight in that. But really, the shit that you see on TV for the news, it's just entertainment. That's all it is. It's not the news.
This is so on 538, just for shits and giggles, the 2022 Senate forecast, they have right now 64-100 Democrats win, 36-100 Republicans win. The House forecast, they have it the other way, 78-22. So I don't know.
Four months to go. Less.
Yeah. Less, man. Less. It's less than 60 days, right? Less than 60 days now.
It's what is it? Second week, November 8th? Like, I can't remember the date.
Second week or first Tuesday, November, second Tuesday, November, right? Is that when they usually do their elections? I forget, but
yeah. Anyways, we got lots to talk about. Let's transition to the Canadian side. And number one, I want to just thank Plate Licking Pleb for this one. And he tweeted us out that there are now shortages for children's Tylenol out there, and you now need a prescription in Ontario to obtain it. So anybody to have children, you may want to go out there and snag this. And I just want to point this out. We had baby food shortages not too long ago, before baby formula shortages not too long ago. Now we have children Tylenol stuff. This is stuff. And I'm not trying to make fun of other places in the world, but this is third world stuff. And this shouldn't even be third world stuff. But it definitely shouldn't be here in Ontario, and that shouldn't happen in the United States. This is stuff that – why is it here? The system is fucking broken. People aren't their eyes are closed. They have to understand what's going on, and we should be nailing people to the cross, that the ones that fucking did this, that created this whole mess. But we're just letting things slide. Today it's children's Tylenol. What's going to happen tomorrow? Eventually, food is going to be fucking short. When that happens, look out, man. This is fucking scary shit.
I was like Shoppers Drug Mart when I got home from the cottage, just like buying some random shit. Our fridge was empty. And the number of items, Lenten, that are locked up in a Shoppers Drug Mart is like staggering. I honestly couldn't believe it. And I thought, I was listening to Red Scare the other day, which is like a podcast that I wouldn't recommend for the faint of heart, but it's two young women from the States talking about the sort of cultural decay. And I thought they were kidding a couple of weeks ago when they were saying baby formula was locked up. But sure enough, baby formula locked up, some shaving stuff locked up, some other like, you know, products that I feel like my wife has probably bought, like certain makeup products locked up. Like I don't, many things, and you may touch on this because you tweeted it today and I think I retweeted it. Like, these are not signs of a healthy economy, and even less so signs of a healthy society, as that's really sort of a prerequisite for a healthy economy, a healthy society. So like, I just don't see, again, like I feel like I'm saying this all the goddamn time, but like, who believes this stuff? You know, are you going to believe me or your lying eyes, as they say? And to me, it seems like the evidence is all around you that things are kind of, as you mentioned, you know, a system that worked for a long, long time for a lot of people, the majority of people, one might argue, is working no longer or starting to falter in a lot of ways that it hasn't before. So I don't know. What's the fix? I don't know if you want to go long on this story or not, but like, what's the fix? I think there's a couple of things you can do. One is obviously buy Bitcoin, you know, ultimate bearer asset. But other things, like, you know, if you see some stuff at Costco that you want that lasts 2 years on the shelf, like maybe buy some.
I've been saying this for a while. If something you could, you know, if it's a canned good and you know it's going to, like, as you mentioned, last a long time, buy an extra couple
just
of
shelf
cans.
It. Yeah. Just shelf
do
it.
And every, you know, every time you go shopping, do a few more like that. And you don't have to do it all at once, but you just slowly do it over time. And lo and behold, after a few months, you might have a pretty good war chest just in case shit hits the fan and you're able to feed yourself and your family. It's worthwhile to consider. And I don't want to like really go down this path, but then you can slowly just eat away at that over time. And you get the oldest stock, you eat it.
It's better than eating a dog in a hard situation.
With snuff sauce, I think it'll be okay. Okay, let's move on, shall we? So, some more shitty news.
I would never eat my... Listen, I did not say that. I would never eat my dog. Len obviously has already considered the threshold for sauce required to chow down. And you got a small dog. My dog's at least big. I don't know. Your dog wouldn't give you much to eat.
You just put it with enough sauce and you could just hide it. Just about everything, right? All right, let's keep moving on. So there was a story that came out from the Toronto Star. I don't really reference them too much, but it was talking about, with inflation at 7.6%, there's a lot of Canadians now turning to short-term loans to pay for necessities. And this is as a result of a survey that was done by Finder. And this survey found that 36% of consumers said their main reason for taking out a loan is to cover bills for rent, mortgage, food, and transportation. Going deep into this, I look at the survey. 1 in 4 Canadians use debt to help them for paying these fixed living expenses. 1 in 4, that's a huge number. And you know what? It's just going to get worse over time. They think that this is just a quick way of getting out of it, and they're going to have to, they'll be able to pay it back moving forward. But as prices continually go up over time and wages are not keeping up with this, you're just going to fall further and further behind. The Toronto Star, their article was talking about, and they brought on an expert. They're saying they should find different options for borrowing money. That's the wrong approach to it. It's kind
are you going to talk about what the first option was?
No, I don't want to talk about any of the options, because the way I'm going to reference it or use the analogy, it's like putting a bandage on a gunshot wound. And that's not the way you should be approaching it. They are talking about other ways, try to find cheaper ways of borrowing money. No, if you're living beyond your means, and I'm not trying to say these people are, like, maybe they got to find something. Maybe I don't know what the fuck it is, but if you are living beyond your means, fucking address it somehow. Try to reduce your expenses. If the house is too expensive, easier said than done, but sell your house, or maybe bring in somebody that could help rent it for you. Maybe rent the basement or another room. Just try to find ways to make ends meet. Borrowing is not the way to fucking do it. You're just digging a bigger hole for yourself. You'll never get out of it. And in the end, you're just going to have to fucking sell or declare bankruptcy, and you'll just be worse off. This is not the way to do things. don't fucking deal with more debt. Deal with the expenses. Once you do that, hopefully you could then move ahead. But until that's dealt with, you're fucking just digging yourself into a bigger, bigger hole.
Sir, the number one option on that list was borrowing from friends and family. And the experts, I don't know where they find these experts, by the way, like complete gong show. The experts are saying, well, you know, that's actually a pretty good idea. The only risk is that if you can't pay it back, you might jeopardize the relationship. Like, no shit, Sherlock. And then they got other stuff in there and they talk about how, you know, payday loans are risky. That's true. Credit cards are not a great idea. Cashback's not a good idea. That's true. But ultimately, like you said, there's never any, much the same way that a doctor, you know, it seems to me these days will never tell you to just shut up and do some jumping jacks. Instead, will prescribe you some kind of lipid to get your, you know, blood levels in order. These guys don't have any interest in stopping the root cause. You know, they'd much rather make money managing your decline than they would stopping the cause of the downfall. You know what I mean? And that seems to be the case in a lot of things these days, unfortunately. But, you know, I hope that people, when we listen to this show, I hope we give, I don't want to say advice because nothing we say is advice. But some of the things we talk about, I hope you think about when you're making decisions financially and say, hey, look, maybe taking on that 20% cash back or whatever cash advance wasn't a great idea or isn't a great idea. Maybe signing a, you know, a fixed term mortgage at, you know, 3% or 2% because the experts keep saying the rates are going to keep going up. You know, think about that kind of stuff. I hope that we give some kind of perspective on all that stuff and it makes a difference in people's lives. But ultimately, Len, unfortunately, although our audience is growing, thank you very much for listeners and to the listeners' views for that. We're never going to have as big an audience as the Toronto Star. And that's what people are looking at. And the people who are reading that stuff, you know, shouldn't the first suggestion from the Toronto Star be, if you want to save some money, stop subscribing to the Toronto Star? Where's that advice? Was that in there?
Never. Because that's an expense that you could easily do away with and put that money to better use. That's just
We got to see until Bruce Arthur stops tweeting. Toronto Star is making too much money. If that guy's still on the payroll over there, they're making too much money.
And I just want to say, Jason Brown was saying that he got out of debt, and good for him. And there is good debt that one could accumulate. I'm going to say, for example, is as a mortgage. You can buy a home, and hopefully the price of that home will go up over a long enough period of time. But then you could also live in it. And so it's not just an asset. It's also consumable at the same time. But that's one example of a good debt that you could get into. So not all debt is bad. So, I mean, I just wanted to end that story on that particular note. Let's move on, Joey. We'll talk about the CDPQ, and that's the pension plan in Quebec. And they wrote off $200 million Canadian, and this is due to their investment in Celsius. And they quote, "We arrived too soon in a sector which was in transition," end quote. And they say they won't make any more bets in the crypto industry. Last I found, their 2022 June filings show that they have $300 billion in net assets. So $200 million out of $300 billion it's a substantial amount. Not all of it, but it hurts. They did poor judgment on this. Like, they didn't do their research. They didn't realize what the fuck they're buying into. Who's suffering as a result? It's all the people that are going to be drawing from this pension moving forward. I feel bad for everybody that is a Quebec pensioner or will be a Quebec pensioner, because they have the wrong people that are managing their fund. It's like they're rolling the dice, and the first shitcoin casino they had option to buy into, they bought into it, and a substantial amount they did. Now they lost and they have to write it off. Too fucking bad. Next time, do your own due diligence. Don't fucking buy garbage like this. Fuck, even if you bought Bitcoin, and I could admittedly say that the price of Bitcoin has gone down from when they bought into Celsius, what they have now, but you could still sell your Bitcoin in the end and get something out of it. Celsius, no, you can't do that. So it's a shitty investment they made. They have shitty people working for them. And unfortunately, it's the pensioners that are suffering the consequences.
Ce n'est pas une bonne raison, Len. J'arrive plus tôt. It is ridiculous, okay? Getting there too early is what they like to say. And, you know, I think they probably got that from a number of other players who got rug pulled over the last 3 or 4 years. Let's talk about the Celsius business model, okay? Are you telling me that's what is it, CDPQ? That's the acronym?
CDPQ.
CDPQ couldn't ask other players in the space. Like, there's really so little due diligence that they didn't think to talk to another lending platform, for example, maybe one that's Canadian, maybe located, like, I don't know, 7 hours drive from where they are in Toronto, you know, in Leiden. Are you telling me they didn't think to talk to one of these other platforms who decided not to do lending and why they decided not to do it? This is, again, I think pension funds.
Local. ShakePay's in Quebec.
ShakePay's in Quebec. Okay, great. So, like, I talk to any of these guys. Talk to any of these guys. Len, pension funds are peacetime monoliths, okay? Of course, when the number only goes up, you can't make a mistake over a long enough time horizon. But guess what? The first sign of turbulent waters, okay? There's not even white caps in the river yet. But the first sign of turbulent waters, these guys lose $200 million. They have to write it off. And who do they blame? Not the diligence, not the poor workers, not the poor work ethic on their part, not the attempt to go out on the risk curve because probably they can see that things are not going the way they need to go over the next 20 years, which is a very under-discussed part of this story, that a pension fund would never do this in an environment where they thought that the claims on their product were going to be met with ease or relative ease. They would never make this kind of move, but they did. It's a disaster. And people should be asking about CDPQ's solvency and what the likelihood of, you know, 20 or 30 years more of seamless claims is going to be. I bet you they'll have a hard time answering that question, period.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What else can I say about that? What a fucking gong show that is. And they're blaming the industry and the point figures. And look, Chuck Emmett even said he saw the guy defending his due diligence, saying no amount of research could have prevented from what happened. Yeah, they should have bought NFTs, I guess, using that type of
The chat's absolutely fucking honking tonight too. You guys are coming up with a lot of good stuff. Yeah, keep it up. And if you're listening on audio, why aren't you in the chat? Like, what?
You're missing.
Like, you're not getting the full experience. Plus, you don't get to watch me try and fix my hair every 30 seconds. What's next?
Talk about a jabroni next. Let's talk about Mr. Macklem. And you touched upon this.
Are we going right into the no coiner of the week here? Like, we may as well. We're not going to? Okay.
No, no, we'll revisit him again later. Don't worry.
But time's the charm, I guess.
But there's more. I just want to touch on what's been said. So for those who are unaware, there was a Globe and Mail article that was talking about, quote, union leaders were frustrated by Bank of Canada's advice for companies not to adjust to inflation their wages, unquote. So this is as a result of TIFF. He was speaking at an event last month in July, if I recall correctly, and he was telling people over there that, you know what, you should not give in to people's whims for higher costs of higher wages. And, you know, this is all just going to take some time, as he says, some time, quote unquote, and you could be confident that inflation will come down. But the fact that he's saying it's going to take some time, and he's even admitting that, that means there's going to be a long enough period of time that this is going to remain high inflation times, as you noted earlier in the show, Joey. 2% target is 2% is their target. They failed miserably to get there. Now we're sitting around 7 to 8%.
He still says, by the way, and in 2024 it's going to be 2%. He still says that.
Even if he says 2% by end of 2024, we're talking two years or so before we get there. And who knows what it's like leading up to that. And during that whole period of time, people, as he suggested, shouldn't get any more raises. You're taking the fucking bread out of people's mouths. That's fucking the worst thing you could do. Because if wages don't keep up, they don't have enough money then to start spending on everything else, including shit that keeps the economy moving, like going to the movies, going to restaurants, and all that shit. All this shit will come spiraling down out of control, and the economy will eventually collapse because there's no money just circulating around, and people are just trying to pay all the expenses they have and even the debt they've accumulated. It's just the wrong way of looking at it. They fucking created this problem, and they don't want it to be addressed by having people make money just to meet the fucking problem that they created. He was talking about that he'll be able to fix this by 2024. He's been wrong in his outlook so often. Remember, we had inflation is not here, is transitory, it's good for us, all this fucking bullshit. And here he is saying that he's going to have this mapped out for the next 2 years and change to figure out how it's going to get back to 2% inflation. Give me a fucking break. And I want to just finish one thing. I don't know what is his salary now, because according to the Bank of Canada's website, I can't get anything past 2017. 2017 is the last information I could find in terms of salary. he makes between $463,000 to $544,000. That was as of 2017. I would imagine that number has gone up.
He's maybe $750,000, right? It's got to be close to $750,000. But
even
now,
if it's still at $500,000 Canadian, you could easily stomach 7-8% increase in cost. But you tell that to the single mother. You tell that to the two people, that two newlyweds that are fucking struggling to pay their rent. You tell them that they don't have to fucking get an increase in wages. But you're going to sit there with $500,000 plus in guaranteed salary and just say, sorry, guys and gals, you're going to make no more fuck this year just because I fucked up. Come on, give me a fucking break. It's a, I don't want to go any further. It's more of a no-coiner rant than anything else. But
how much further, Len? Like, I'm not going to say anything about this because I think that if we continue to talk about TIFF, there's not going to be anything left for the end of the show. Like, we've already talked about him twice now, and both times, you know, we were not exactly judicious with our time. So, like, what's going to be left?
There's nothing more to say about it. We could just reference who it is. So, is there anything more you want to talk about this topic?
I think you're spot on, man. I think that labor leaders are right to be upset. I think that the incentives for labor leaders, I can't believe I'm saying this, but for the first time, makes sense because they need to keep their unions, their teams, et cetera, happy. And to keep people happy, you can't not give them raises when the cost of living is going up 9%. And by the way, we've talked about how that 9% number is actually not legit. So, like, you know, to your point about newlyweds and single mothers, like, that's one piece of the pie. But Len, you know, I'm sure there are people living in my neighborhood who are feeling the pinch. I'm sure there are people living in your neighborhood who are feeling the pinch. And I'm sure there are people who are trying to, you know, families with two children, for example, with three children, you know, about to start back to school. Back to school this year is going to look a lot different on the receipt than it did last year. And your paycheck's not looking a lot different. In fact, you may have not been able to work because of there's a diplomatic term for this I'm not going to say, but you know, lockdowns, et cetera. You know, you may find yourself a little bit more underwater than you did at this time last year. And those difficulties all compound. And it's like one of the ultimate disconnected things to say, I think. And to Yochi's point in the chat, yeah, Tiff, you're welcome here anytime, man. I would even let you come over and make you a nice cricket souffle. I'm sure you'd be telling me to eat one before fucking too much longer. So
you were talking about being disconnected, and I just want to wrap up the Canadian story with one very unique tweet that came out from a NDP MP. And I'm not sure if you came across this one, Joey, because it was a real interesting tweet from Bonita Zarillo. And she tweeted this and then shortly thereafter deleted this. So this
could be nice.
So keep in mind, we live in Canada, cold. I don't know, depending on where you are, it could be 8-9 months of the year. But even here in nice, warm Southern Ontario, we get cold 6 months of the year. It's chilly sometimes, like for a good chunk of the year. And her tweet is indoor skating ice even a necessity anymore? Can every ice sport be done without ice and different equipment? Just pondering the climate impact of human-made indoor ice. And she wants now to, it looks like, get rid of ice rinks, indoor ice rinks, ice hockey, and anything to do with using indoor skating rinks. And she had to delete this because there was so much flack as a result of coming off. So I don't get it. And the beauty of this, she did it from her iPhone. And I just want to state that the smartphone industry in a given year, it emits about 560 million tons of carbon annually. So the fact that she's using her smartphone to send out this tweet is so rich. These are the people that are responsible for creating our laws, our policies, and they want to now get rid of ice rinks. It's fucking cold 6 months of the year. You can just,
the good old hockey game is like our second national anthem. How can we get rid of ice rinks? What are we talking about here?
It's not what I'm talking. It's what she was talking about. I'm just bringing her argument to everybody's attention here.
Okay.
What a fucking joke.
This is one of the reasons. So I'll tell you right now, one of the reasons I was really excited to get Doomberg for the show was because it's a team of people over there, but there's one guy who's obviously been frequently representing them in podcasts and other visual and audio media.
We're going to be A-team, right? not getting like the,
you know, we're getting the man, the legend. So I'll just note that one of the things Doomberg says that I really like, and why I want to hear, and I want everyone else to hear, that sort of his bear case against Bitcoin, is because whenever he's met with stuff like this, you know, people tweeting from their iPhones about reducing carbon, and people flying on jets to go to climate summits, and this other kind of nonsense, it's a very simple response, right? You first. And until someone of this ilk, right, this sort of people who attend climate symposiums on G6s, until one of these guys starts living like, you know, an 18th century serf, I don't want to fucking hear it. I don't want to fucking hear it from any of these guys. And I think everyone should have that response. It's very easy. It's very plain. It makes sense even to people who understand or think they understand, you know, where climate is heading. I think that's the obvious answer. You do it first if you think it's so important, and then we'll talk about me doing it. Very simple.
Yeah, unless your food is grown locally, your clothes are produced locally.
I want you to weave the clothes locally on cotton that, like, you presumably grew in like a nearby field or something. Like, otherwise, we're not talking about this. It's just ridiculous that these guys bring this up all the time.
Yeah, and you got to ditch the phone. And if anybody's going to use the phone as they're going to say it's for security or whatever, no, it's for convenience. I lived most of my life in a time when there was no smartphone. And so I could tell you firsthand experience that has nothing to do with safety. It's all about convenience. And if somebody is going to define how much carbon is required to make your life more convenient, fuck you, because you're then saying using carbon is good for certain things. If you're saying carbon is bad, it applies to everything. You can't pick and choose what it's good for. It's bad across the board, period. And I don't want to fucking hear it.
They can at least start by flying Canada 3000 to the meetings. I know Chooch in the chat saying make them take an Air Canada, but I'm old enough to remember Canada 3000. I swear to God, you could be going across the Atlantic Ocean, a door would tear off, and to make it up to you, they'd give you a tiny bag of peanuts. It's like,
you got to go to Transat. Transat, with now their new bailout, they have these new shiny aircraft. They're good. I think it's Transat. They're good to go. So you know you're going to be flying first class, even if you're on coach.
Whatever. And how many are we going long tonight? Like, we just finished.
As best as possible. And that's it for the Canadian news. I do have some rest of the news. We're gonna ditch that because we've gone long on everything. I'm gonna go right to the Bitcoiner and Nocoiner of the week. I have both.
Okay.
I think we have unanimous consent.
I only got TIFF. I only want to talk about TIFF because I think that the guy, yeah. I'll pull up the graphic. You talk about the sponsor.
So it's sponsored by Tahini's Restaurants. There's the hat. Go check them out. There's 15 locations, from what I understand, last I checked, in Southern Ontario. So if you have a carbon-emitting car or even an electric car, doesn't give a shit, and you live in Southern Ontario, you're within driving distance of getting a fucking great meal. Check it out. Ali's a Bitcoiner. He added more Bitcoin to his balance sheet a few weeks back. How could you say no for getting a great meal and supporting a great Bitcoiner? You're doing yourself a disservice by not going there. But so my Bitcoiner of the week, I'm just going to go with him quickly. It's HODLNOT. And for people who are unaware of what's going on, he, and I'm going to say this before so we don't get sued, allegedly said something wrong to Mr.
Someone else. Someone else.
Yeah. So allegedly, I'm not saying it did, and it pissed that gentleman off. He's getting sued in both Norway and the UK. The Norway case is going through swimmingly. Nothing wrong there. But apparently the UK case is very costly. And there's a lot of garbage that he went through. Apparently, there was they tried to dox him, and he did successfully dox him through some very shady needs, allegedly shady needs. Sorry. So, with all that being said, a lot of people stepped up to the plate and helped him by donating some Bitcoin to him. We tried. I reached out to him too because I'd like to donate some of the Fountain 2.0 Sats to him, but I didn't get any reply back. I'd still like to do it. So if he wants to give us his Fountain username, we'll be happy just to redirect Sats over there. But still, nonetheless, this guy's gone through a lot of crap. And even Michael Saylor has tweeted out about him. We are all HODLNOTs. And so, yeah, so he's my Bitcoiner of the week. I'm not sure if you want to add any more color to that.
No, I'm glad you brought it up. I think that I think Gandalf maybe has a lead to that guy if we need it and we want to get a hold of his, you know, wallet address, something like that. I am more than happy to donate Sats to him. He's really been the face of a couple of things in my view. One, you know, being brave enough to say things he said and sticking with it, right? I don't know exactly what other alternatives there were, but certainly he's, you know, if you listen to a lot of other podcasts where there's guys who know him and his family a little better than we do, obviously, it's been very difficult for him and his family. And the bills are in the millions now, according to Marty and Matt on TFTC from Rabbit Hole Recap last week. So anything you can do to help is great, whether it comes through us or you do it on your own. There's a website where you can donate anonymously, or if you want a tax receipt, you can get a tax receipt as well. I think that might be US only, but let's see if someone does donate anonymously. Let me know exactly how that looks. Also, other thing, it's not enough to be a NIM if you're going to talk about people who want to go this route with you and have the means to make life difficult for you via litigation. Being a NIM is not going to be enough. And so I would just caution people on what they say on Twitter and the people they down talk. I know Bitcoin Twitter sometimes, you know, and I'm guilty of this too. God knows I've deleted a lot of tweets in my life. You know, Bitcoin Twitter can really spin you up and mob mentality takes over. It's real. There's a real vibe sometimes of like, you know, a bunch of kids on the beach killing piggy kind of deal. And just be careful is all. Being a NIM is not always enough to protect you in a legal sense. And not everyone has the reach that HodlNot does. It's important to take care of yourself first. And that's just where I'll leave it, I think.
You can be a NIM. You just have to be very careful in how you do things. He was seen out in public and there were some photos of him. So you really have to live it and then hide your tracks really well. Tor, VPN, the whole nine yards. If you really want to live that life, it's a challenge to do so, but you can do it. But you just got to make sure you cover all your tracks.
You're just Lenonymous, so not anonymous.
So I do have two no coiners a week. One before we get to the unanimous one, the other no coiner I just want to say, actually it's two guys, and apparently they were at a Bitcoin meetup. This is from Boomer, and they are definitely no coiners.
Yes.
You mentioned there were two people that were at the Ottawa Bitcoin meetup last night.
Newly formed Ottawa Bitcoin meetup.
And they skipped out on paying their tab. How fucking pathetic is that? I want to know why they did it. And if they could somehow give the money to Boomer so it could be distributed amongst everybody there, we could rectify this fucking problem. But you two gentlemen are fucking no coiners for doing that. That's a fucking scum move.
Big time. Totally agree. Skipping on the bill never ever good. Affects the service, affects the bar, affects different policies in the bar, affects pricing. Just don't be an idiot. It's completely immature and ridiculous.
And the unanimous choice for no coiner of the week. There's nothing else.
How much more you got on him, Len? Here we go.
I have nothing else to say about it. Everything that I have to say has been said. I think ditto for you, but I'll let you talk about him anymore. But Tiff Macklem is the no coiner of the week. And in fact, he might be a Hall of Famer no coiner the way he's talking these days. If you want to hear my rant, go back 15, 20 minutes. You'll hear exactly what I said about him. Joey, if you want to add anything to it, be my guest. But really, I'm done talking about him.
I'm in the same boat. I put out a thread of tweets that day too. Just, you know, a lot of all caps sprinkled in there that I actually thought about deleting after I sent it because I thought it was too harsh. It seems to me, Len, that there's almost no words harsh enough for what this guy is out there saying now. And, you know, I would posit to people who are listening and watching the show, think about why he's saying those things, the kind of politician who supports him saying those things, and the repercussions for the society that you live in, your children will have to live in because of these poor decisions and just these poor ideas trying to fix poor ideas, you know, in perpetuity. Awful stuff, man. Truly a deserving no coiner.
So look what Boomer wrote. He said those guys, the two guys that skipped out on the bill, they left with some merch they got for free, and it was worth more than the tab. So incredible stuff. The double dipping at that. So they're getting the free meal and free drinks and some free merch. Scummy move, man. Scummy fucking move. So we got to find out who they are. And maybe they can rectify things by paying everybody that paid up for them. And it's a shitty move. Definitely no corner worthy.
Yeah, absolutely. So before we wrap on the audio side, let's talk about what the next few days is going to look like for CBP Media. We're very busy. Tomorrow, we got, at a weird time, Doomberg wants to do it during the day, and I have some time on my lunch hour to do it, and Len is going to be there as well. We're going to do the first Bear Cave CBP segment. I don't know how often we're going to do these. I want the guests to be high quality, and I want the content to be educational for you guys so we can hear the other side. I want smart people who aren't necessarily, and this is important, aren't necessarily anti-Bitcoin, but think that Bitcoin isn't going to work long-term. And so Doomberg, great example. He's a very bright fella. I've been listening to a lot of his stuff. I recommend you guys do the same. So he'll be on with us tomorrow, 12 to 1. And then Wednesday at 7 p.m., we're bringing on Michael Green, ProfPlum99 on Twitter, who's also a very vocal Bitcoin bear. He's had debates with Nick Carter, among others. You can find him in the Tuesday Green Candle Spaces from time to time, talking about Bitcoin, talking about crypto. And he's got a lot of views on Tether, among other things, reasons that he thinks Bitcoin won't work in the long run. I think he's also got a national security angle as well that I'm interested in hearing about. So those are the next 2 days on our channel. And then Thursday, Len and I are playing an away game with Tom and Nick Carrazza over at Your Life, Your Terms. We're going to go to Oakville and do a show with them. That'll be released, I guess, next week or something. That'll probably be an hour and a half or so. Looking forward to that. And we're also going to put out a Nooner this week as well. So I don't know when we're going to record that. We're probably not going to stream it because
we don't want to get into specifics, but it's probably not going to be streamed. And we're going to be recording it and releasing it when we're available to do so. So stay tuned for that Nooner episode, and we'll have a spicy topic we'll talk about on that episode. But the two bear caves for the next 2 days, it's uncharted waters for us. So we'll be kind of figuring our way out through this. Hopefully it works out really well. And because we have some really good guests and they know their stuff, I suspect it's going to be a dynamite episode. Plural.
I'll tell you guys now, because I got some pushback on the tweets and I got a couple DMs too. I am not planning on engaging in a debate style discussion with either guest or any guest down the road. What I want them to do is give me their best, longest form steel man argument. Why is this thing not going to work? Where do they find these holes? Let's see if we have some common ground. I think Len and I probably have concerns too about Bitcoin. You know, we may not be as concerned as the bears, of course, given the, you know, investment we parked and show we're doing. But, you know, I think there's more common ground between the really smart Bitcoin bears and people who've been in Bitcoin for a few years than we realize. And I want to catch that ground. I want to make that the focus. And of course, you know, if you guys have ideas for the Bear Cave episodes, I would be so, so happy to hear them. I am trying to get George Gammon, Patrick Srezna, Kevin Muir, Peter Schiff, among others. All those guys, I think, have a lot more in common with the Bitcoin crowd than we give them credit for. Again, I think Twitter sometimes, you know, for better or worse, turns into kind of a mudslinging contest, which is fun sometimes, but other times not always productive. I would love to get those guys on. And so if you have any ideas, shoot me a DM, tweet me, whatever. We'll definitely consider it and see what we can do.
Canada just came out this past week. Not really Canada, the Ontario with the OSC, with those new regulations or policies against shitcoins. It's easy to consider that's going to move over to Bitcoin. So clearly we're on the same page that there may be some government action against Bitcoin. I have no problems listening to somebody bring a educated argument and bring that to the table, and I'll be happy to talk about that. Because even I have concerns eventually that governments, not just Canada, but even the United States, may want to turn their back. Well, they haven't really turned their front to Bitcoin, but be less receptive to Bitcoin moving forward. They have the means, they have the ability, they could put up a lot of barriers. I'm listening. I have my ears open, and I'm coming into this with wide open eyes, and I'll be happy to hear their argument and hear their discussion. I'm not going to fight it.
Me neither. I think you're absolutely right, Len. Thanks for tuning in, everyone. We're going to do the after show now. If you're on audio, come on over to the video side, watch the end. Don't forget about the contest. Listen to the front of the show for the contest. You can win one of 24, 25, whatever we got, ShakePay Canadian Bitcoiners collab t-shirts. Thank you to ShakePay for printing those. And we will see you tomorrow for Doomberg, I hope. Take care, everybody.
Yes, take care.